All right, and welcome back to the second and final hour of Cancel the Cabal on Paranoia TV, Tesla Wolf Media, and People's Internet Radio. I happened to mention to Chip, my guest, Chip Tatum, happened to mention to him the other day in the chat we had that I had just been accepted to Tesla Wolf Media and Paranoia TV, and asked him if he could do video, and he said that would be fine. So for the watchers, that's who you are seeing is former Army sergeant, I believe he is, and special operations man for the military, Chip Tatum. Welcome to the show, Chip.
Thank you, Steven.
I know a lot of people ask you for your bio. I mean, ask you for your whole life story, but in a nutshell, I believe at the age of 19, you went into the Army and was recruited by the CIA to go into Vietnam and do special operations. Is that about a nutshell?
Actually, the Air Force.
Uh-huh. Air Force? Okay, sorry.
No problem.
But that alone fascinated me, Chip. Just the Vietnam era, all of the stuff that I've only been doing this for 5.5 years, being a researcher, and just 22 months as a broadcaster. I do have a journalism degree, but that's only for the street cred, you know. Most anybody can do this, as you know. You do this several times a week yourself. You have your own show. Would you like to plug that show for a few seconds here?
Sure. I'm a writer and one of the hosts for Veterans Today at veteranstoday.com. We're previewed on Freedom Slips, the Revolution Radio, also on the Micro Effect. I stand in host for several others. We have our own network called the Firehorse Network. That's firehorsenetwork.com, where we actually rebroadcast shows for other alternative media personnel. So quite busy. When I leave the show today, I'll be going to Press TV to do an interview with Iranian TV.
Yes. That's what you mentioned just before we went live, Chip. I've known Professor James Fetzer for about a year and a half now. I've had him on the show twice. He's a great guy, just a plethora of information in the conspiratorial world. Although I really hate that word conspiracy theory, especially when they put theory on the end of it. There really aren't any theories when it comes in this conspiracy world, Chip. They're mostly conspiracy facts, if you will.
Well, they leave so many things to question that one has no alternative but to question. So, and that's good because a lot of information can be put out there so that people can look into it and make their own decision.
Yeah, I think the American people are just getting fed up with being told to move along. There's nothing to see here. You know, we've told you that there's a lone gunman, so you should believe us and go back to your nice cushy homes. And I think, I don't know whether they actually believe that we're supposed to believe that or not.
Well, they sure do seem to believe that. They want to believe it. Let's put it like that.
Sure.
I believe that they want to.
Yes. And for some people, it does work for them. But a lot of us, it doesn't work. As I mentioned here a few minutes ago, Chip, I'm really fascinated with your military career over there in Vietnam. Your biggest project is called Operation Red Rock.
Yeah, I was volunteered for a special operations mission.
Volunteered,
yeah.
Did your sergeant or your captain say someone step forward and then everyone step backwards, or was it something like that, or?
Actually, I was the only jump qualified communications man in the area of operations. When the regular team member broke his leg, I was the only one qualified to go in.
There you go. My dad was actually a air traffic controller for the Navy back in the early 50s. That's what he said his job was.
Yeah.
And you were too, weren't you?
Yep. Combat controller.
Yeah. I often asked him why he didn't go into the civilian role of being an air traffic controller. He probably could have made a real good living, but he didn't.
Yeah, many of us do, and then many of us don't. I didn't because I stayed active duty military through 1992. So
did you? Okay.
Active duty government, not quite military all the time.
Yeah. Well, I know a lot of people have heard about Red Rock. Maybe a lot of people haven't. I'm actually one of the networks you're on right now, Chip, is based over in Dublin, Ireland. I'm sure a lot of people have heard about it, but don't really know what it is. Would you like to talk about Red Rock?
Sure. Red Rock was an operational plan put in place by the White House in 1970. The President Nixon and his crew had decided, you know, they needed to do something to make a positive move to exit Vietnam. But they really couldn't exit Vietnam without getting local support to support the South Vietnamese. They needed Laos, they needed Cambodian, they needed those militaries to step up and take the place of any American military that was there. And so we worked in arming and training Cambodian military. We sent gobs of money over to Lon Nol, the premier of Cambodia. But unfortunately, he was a fence sitter, and he was accepting money from the United States, and he was accepting money from China to protect the North Vietnamese who were gathering in the borders, behind the borders, hiding from the U.S. military. So it became a matter of getting Lon Nol off the fence, so to speak, and having him go against the Chinese and the North Vietnamese regime. And one way we decided to do that, an attempt to do that, was to pose as Viet Cong, go into Cambodia, into Phnom Penh, blow up their airport, and leave. And so that was the operation that was called Operation Red Rock.
So in essence, they contracted you to do a false flag.
That was the first false flag I'm aware of in my life.
Yeah.
I imagine there were more before then, but that's the first that I'm aware of.
Right. Did they even tell you it was going to be a false flag, or did they just tell you that they needed to do this for support? Or
no, well, we knew that we were going in dressed as Viet Cong, in North Vietnamese uniform. We knew that. We knew we were leaving Viet Cong bodies around because we jumped in with the prisoners, shot them once we started the operation. We started leaving their bodies around different places on the airport. But what we didn't know is that we were never meant to return.
Oh.
And that was one of the orders that Nixon had given at the White House. On my debriefing, I was told that his orders were no one can ever know. And fortunate for us, General Haig didn't stand by that, and he did work at trying to get us rescued out of our captivity after the successful operation. Little too late, all but three of us were killed.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, that's too bad. Would have liked to have had 13 whistleblowers out there instead of just one, two, or three, right?
Oh, man, I'll tell you. I'd like to have seen us all come back. There were a great, great group of guys. I was the young kid. I was only a 19-year-old, but it was a mix. It was all military forces plus the CIA.
Yeah,
were members of Team Red Rock. And following the mission after the debriefing, even though three of us were alive, only two of us made it through the hospital. And then our platoon sergeant just passed away just a couple of years ago.
Yeah. I understand from a Ted Gunderson interview that you had a 25-year gag on you after you come back and was debriefed, huh?
Yeah, and that's normal. When you leave military, if you have any type of security clearance, you have to sign Disclosure Act, Non-Disclosure Act, where you sign and agree to not talking about any of the operations or any of your work for 25 years following the your active service. Or if you do want to release information, you have to go come forward to them and ask permission. In other words, if you wanted to write a book, like the Navy SEALs wrote their book,
yes.
You should take that book, give it to the government, and let them sign off on it. If you don't, then you can face some serious charges.
Yes. I've actually heard that somebody that wants to write a book about the FBI or the CIA, they have to get it vetted through them two agencies first.
Yeah, and it comes out with a lot of black lines in it, I'll guarantee you that.
I'll bet, especially if you have any kind of knowledge about anything that went on. Yeah, that's that redacting. I'm surprised that somebody hasn't, in the last 40 years, figured out how to get around that redacting, the black lines.
And you know, they seem to use the clause national security a lot.
Well, sure.
When in actuality, it's just the fact that they don't think the American people can hear the truth. There was a movie out where Jack Nicholson was a colonel in Guantanamo Bay. He sat forward and said, "You can't handle the truth," or something like that.
Yeah, that's
really the attitude of the American government toward the American people.
Yeah,
they can't take the
truth. I think that was A Few Good Men with Tom Cruise, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. But also, Chip, I think the phrase national security, I think that's just a new code word for we screwed up and now we have to cover it up somehow.
Right. Yeah. And it works.
Yeah. You probably can't go into much detail what happened over there in Red Rock, though, can you?
Well, I can. I actually wrote a book called Operation Red Rock. Okay. We had to change a lot of the names to get it published. We tried to publish it with original names, and it was thrown back at us. So,
yeah.
So we changed the names, put it out there, and it's actually doing quite well and is available on Amazon.
Is it? Okay. What did you actually do for this false flag? You blew up something, or are you?
I was the communications guy. That was my job.
I didn't. I got it.
The whole idea was to go into Phnom Penh Airport, blow up the airport. You know, most of the aircraft were given to them by us anyhow.
Yeah.
It was our equipment. The arms they used, most of them were our arms. So we went in and we blew up our stuff and we left. We did have to kill some of his people, and we did kill some of the Cambodian military guarding the base. As an added benefit, we saw his Air Force One, Lon Nol's presidential aircraft, and one of our team members kind of got carried away and threw a satchel over it and blew it up too. But it was quite an operation. It wasn't involving just the ground forces, our part, but we had contract pilots flying mismarked aircraft, dropping bombs on the airport, so that they thought it was North Vietnamese making a full-blown attack against Lon Nol, giving him no choice. Once the operation was over, he acquiesced, contacted the American government. We had already put the aircraft carrier and aircraft and supplies just offshore, and within 3 days he was restocked with new aircraft, new personnel, and we were in. America was in, and we were operational in Cambodia at that point. However, it was a little late in the game, and the Chi Coms were just too far entrenched for us to overcome anything at that point.
Yeah, you know, I have to say, I phrased that a little bit wrong the other day, or a few minutes ago. I didn't mean you personally. I meant you metaphorically as a team.
Right.
But anyways, I was just wondering, why would Nixon want you all not to come back? Did he actually trust the North Koreans not to, kill you and not say anything to anyone? Or North Korea could have just kept you captive and brought you out in front of the cameras like they did many, many soldiers and touted you around towns, you know, We've got American spies here. Look at what they did. They blew up our air base, and now we have them. How could Nixon have trusted them not to do that?
If you'll recall, we were dressed as North Vietnamese.
Yes, but
and we were in Cambodia.
Okay.
We were actually captured by North Vietnamese, and that was suspect to them, us dressed like them.
And I said,
"We are." We didn't speak to them. I mean, they tortured us. We did not speak to them. They did not know exactly who we are to the day that the three of us were liberated from that camp.
But they
went through some horrible torture.
Yeah.
We didn't talk. So, you know, they could have paraded us. They could have done what they wanted to. But we still wouldn't have talked.
Yeah. And I made a mistake. I said North Koreans.
Right.
I meant North Vietnamese.
The Koreans are in the news these days. I understand.
Yeah. Yeah. They are. But, you know, I understand that dead men don't tell tales. Dead men don't talk. But still, that could have been a very, very bad debacle for Nixon himself. And that could have ended his political career long before the other scandal did.
Yeah, but you know, if you look at it, captives normally will end up reading off a speech that was written by their captors. So believability wouldn't have been there. The government would have said, "Oh, they're just reading off a speech. You know, that's not really what happened. That's not, you know." So there's a lot of ways they could spin that easily, and the American public would take it in stride. What couldn't be known though. Was that by law null that it was a false flag of Americans coming in and doing it. Nor did they want at that point any other country to know that America would stop at nothing to double cross a country to get them involved. And now we see ourselves working with other countries trying to get them involved and, boots on the ground in other areas. And I can tell you now, certain aspects of operations, to try to entice them in with boots on the ground are taking place.
Well, that leads me into another question I was going to bring up, Chip. The CIA has personally had their hands in, I believe I heard someone say one time, I'm not sure if it's true or not, but it's like over 3,000 tiny little wars they've actually created through false flags or through agent provocateurs. With this kind of a history, what would make any country want to deal with the U.S.?
Money.
Yeah, but half of these.
That's what it's been in the past. You know, people wonder why our aid program and sending aid to so many other countries, why we do send so much aid out. We're actually buying loyalty. That's all we're doing. Look, if we could quit sending money to these foreign countries, these third world countries, they wouldn't have anything to do with us. I guarantee it. You know, I lived in South America, in several countries in South America for 12 years. And they laugh when they see the news of what America, how America lies to their, yeah, to the American people.
Yeah.
And sees. I mean, it's a joke to them. So.
Well, it's a joke to a lot of other countries too. People that know the truth, people that don't have, bought and paid for whores in the media. The ones that read off of the teleprompter that comes right from the White House or the Pentagon, basically. But, you know, I can think of many, many of these little 10-horn dictators that have been double-crossed and killed by the American army or the American military that the CIA helped set up. Still, there's a you know, there's a history of this problem reaction solution, and then setting up one of their little guys in the country, and then taking them out 10, 20, 30 years later.
You know, the CIA is very, very adept at regime changes. Unfortunately, once we enact a regime change, the people we put in end up being booted out by their own people and by us also. Poor little Panama, we did regime changes there twice.
Yeah.
We did with Torrijos and again with Noriega. They were both our guys. Yet we ended up, Torrijos got a little too big for his britches, so we just put a bomb and a cooler on his plane and,
yeah,
took him out. And then Noriega, many of you remember I guess it was Operation Just Cause, where,
yes,
we went into Panama and attacked Panama and took out a sitting president.
President Noriega. I watched that on TV myself. Heard all
that. I didn't see it on TV. I was there firsthand.
Okay, I see. Yeah, but I heard all the loud rock and roll music being played into his being focused on his compound and that, and they would play all kinds of probably mind control technique music or sounds or something to try to get him to break and try to get him to come out. I remember that.
Yeah, that was our PsyOps boys.
Yes, in. Yes, yeah. Yes. What did you have to do? Did you have to do anything with PsyOps or just Black Ops?
No, just Black Ops. So, I was with the 160th in active duty. For those of you who don't know when the 60th is, during the bin Laden raid, there was a helicopter that came in and crashed, and we saw the tail of that aircraft. That was the unit I was with years before. And we didn't have such elaborate aircraft then. I flew Little Birds for them, which is a OH-6 Magnum PI helicopter, that kind of helicopter, only with guns and missiles on it.
That was an old Huey, wasn't it?
No, it was a OH-6.
OH-6, okay.
We didn't actually, we were formed after the debacle in the desert, when Carter sent the multi-forces in to do a hostage rescue in Iran, and the several different military forces weren't accustomed to working together, and everyone wanted a foot in, and so the generals put this type of aircraft in and this type of aircraft. They didn't send anyone like me, like a combat controller, in to control these aircraft. They sent the wrong kind of aircraft in, so that the sand ate up the engines and the filters of the helicopters. And so it was a mess, and they ended up running into each other in the desert. After that, it was decided that they needed a special operations unit from the many different services who were able to function together. So they took us all from different services. They sent us into a place called Fort Campbell, Kentucky, and they formed 160th Aviation, which was, they brought in special forces. They brought in normal Army pilots. We had Marine pilots, special forces operators, a couple CIA guys. They brought them in from all the Air Force, from all different military services to form the initial 160th, and then grew it from there. And now it's in several different bases and falls under the Special Operations Command.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if you've ever been asked this question or not, Chip, but I'm under the realization that some of these groups you're talking about, these blackout groups, when they're in active duty, sometimes they could be killed off, not physically killed, but killed off and virtually killed off, you know, killed off the planet, but they're still alive. And that way they can put these, a lot of times mainly men, into these groups, into these blackout groups. That wasn't the case with you, was it? I mean, you were still active duty. They didn't kill you off and then send you over to do your job, or?
Not exactly. There are many times that we did have alternative identities.
Okay.
Yeah. And those are formed years and years before. Look, State Department, Secret Service, they can form a person, say they're looking at 20 years down the road. They want to make sure they have enough identities, to flop into people that they need for witness protection or for special ops. So they'll form that person now in the computer. So that person's alive and well, has a social security number, is aged. So there's nothing suspicious if someone hacks in and sees if this person really existed 15 years ago.
Right.
So you have authenticated people.
Create a past, yeah.
That exists, and you can walk right into that person's identity.
Sure.
Very easily, very quickly.
Sure. You see that, they show that in the movies and TV shows all the time. Yeah. And a lot of times these identities, wouldn't they be people that are already deceased?
No, they're actually people that were formed years ago for this purpose.
Okay, so they're
never really did exist.
They're just fictional people to begin with, then. Okay.
They form these birth certificates. Birth certificates formed this year would be used in 20 years, 25 years.
Okay, sure.
And they're actual people who really never existed. So, you know, if you try to use a deceased person with technology today, intelligence entities and so forth have enough on the ball where they can tell that, hey, look, you know, this person died.
They would be
this
caught.
This database says that the person with this name and this age, this birthday, died 6 years ago.
So, yeah, you know, or they haven't been seen in 6 years.
Right. So they give them fresh identities.
Yeah, I guess
only the bad guys use the graveyard statistics.
Yeah, the identity thieves. Are the people that try to forge identities anyways.
You know, I have friends who used it just to get offshore and use those identities offshore just before offshore banks to keep their monies hidden. So, you know, I shouldn't say bad guys. It's just people who just didn't want to pay their taxes, didn't want to do the American thing, you know?
Yeah.
Others, surprisingly enough, others use these identities only for travel. They'll get identities from Canada and Great Britain and use those for travel because they don't want to travel as an American because Americans are so targeted.
Yeah, because a lot of Americans have given up their sovereignty and we're just nothing but slaves to the government. And you know what? Oddly enough, Chip, the people that come in to America, whether they be illegally or legally. You mentioned Canadians and most predominantly the South Americans, the Mexicans and some of the other countries down here. the reason they're treated more well off than Americans are is because they are from a sovereign nation, and they're treated as sovereign people here in America. But once they get their citizenship here in America, they're just like all the rest of us, slaves.
Right. Once they become a statistic.
Once they become a statistic. Exactly.
Well, you know, I've recently gone through the experience that I had a son born to me down in South America, and I went through the immigration process trying to get him approved. It took 2 years to get his U.S. citizenship. Now, he was born to a U.S. father, U.S. citizen. It took me 2 years, over $5,000, to get his U.S. citizenship. So I can imagine how difficult it is for others trying to come into the country under the legal auspices. It doesn't make sense for them to do it that way. My attorney told me, you know, had you just brought him here illegally, we could have gotten it done within 3 months.
Yeah.
For $500.
Or weeks or something like that. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's really a shame what the process is trying to get somebody into this country legally. I can share a little case. I have a relative that married an illegal about 6 years ago, 5 years ago, somewhere in there. And his mother died down in Mexico, and he foolishly wanted to go back down and see her. But she died, and he missed her dying by 2 days. And he's been down there ever since for over two and a half years now, trying to get back. He's married to an American citizen, and it doesn't really matter. He was illegal at one time, and they're going to make him jump through the hoops this time.
Exactly.
Yeah. I think he's getting close to being able to come back, though, but, you know, that's just my little personal story. What are some other stories you might be able to share from the Vietnam era, Chip?
Wow, Vietnam. Well, during the Vietnam era, I was sent to Guam and worked communications for two Apollo programs, Apollo 16 and Apollo 17.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, that was interesting. I worked during the Nixon administration. I worked on the Beijing visit where Nixon went to Beijing. And before Nixon actually went there, Kissinger went there several times and several times afterwards. And we worked VIP support for Kissinger on all of his flights. So had some very, very interesting trips and back and forth. I worked for White House Communications and controlling Air Force One in and out of certain overseas arenas. It was interesting, to say the least.
That's pretty interesting, yeah. I don't know. I guess we could skip and chase a different rabbit here for a while. A more recent, newer rabbit. I'd like to get your thoughts on this last 5 years in this country, this administration.
Well, you're talking about the Obama administration?
Yes, I am.
You know, I do see, having worked for five administrations in the past, I do see a major difference between this administration and previous administrations. And most recently, I've seen an attack against our president, the president. Not that I care for this administration in the least, because honestly, I don't. But I have seen what we worked in Pegasus and in the operational subgroups for many years was our job was to align leaders, align foreign diplomats, align financiers, and politicians around the world into thinking along the lines of what we needed. In other words, say that there was a big vote coming up in a particular country and we needed a country to vote a certain way. We would go into that country, identify the leaders of that country whom we needed to get on our side and invite them to join our side. And if they didn't join our side and join voting the way we wanted them to vote, then we would neutralize them. And neutralizations could be intimidation. We could go in and just intimidate them various means. One popular way was just tell them, look, vote the way you want, or we're going to wipe your bank accounts out.
Certainly.
We would, you know, they love money.
Yeah.
Politicians. That's the big reason they're there to begin with. We could degrade family members. We could Gary Hartman, get him caught in an affair with someone.
Gary Hartman, huh? I like the way you said that. Yeah, I caught that interview with Gunderson. You was happening to mention to you paid mention to Gary Hart and his scandal. But were you
several different ways? So And what I've seen, folks, what I've seen just recently, you know, I've noticed that Obama was very hesitant on getting back into the war. You know, he pushed and put, he seemed to push and push and be genuine in trying not to get back involved over there. But I think he was pushed to a point that he had to do something. But apparently it just wasn't enough because he wouldn't acquiesce to boots on the ground and getting back into a full-fledged war. What I believe is the powers that be outside of the presidency, and there are those outside of the presidency that have huge, huge powers, those that I worked for before, have gone so far, have become so bulletproof that they breached the White House through the Secret Service. They sent a message to him by allowing this man to get all the way through the East Room of the White House.
The man with the knife? Yeah.
The man with, doesn't matter, had sure. a knife or didn't have anything.
Right.
He was able to penetrate the White House all the way to the East Room, passing all of the Secret Service. And any of you who've been to the White House before know there's Secret Service all over the place.
Yes, there
there's
is.
No way that's going to happen if they don't let it happen.
That's right.
And they
that's
let
right.
it happen.
And it's,
additionally, when he came down here to MacDill, on his way, he stopped at CDC in Atlanta to announce the 3,000 troop force going into Africa on the Ebola project.
Yeah.
There was a felon with a gun allowed in the elevator with the president.
Yep.
That doesn't happen either. You know, Stephen, those are messages.
Yes,
they're
they
nothing
are.
More than messages. The message is, we want you to do what we tell you to do, or something's going to happen to your daughters or your family members. And if you don't believe it, watch what we can do.
Yes. I mean,
that's exactly what they did.
Yeah, exactly. November 22nd, 1963 comes to mind. You know, I'm surprised that all of these men aren't ushered into a room right after their victory, and they say, "Well, Mr. President, we've got a nice little film we could show you. We've got these Secret Service men that are ordered off of your car in Dallas, right there in downtown Dallas. You can see them being ordered off his car, and his protective detail was 30 feet away from him."
Right. Normally, there's a rider on each side and on the back. And
exactly. Work. Each side in the front and each side in the back.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And, you know, that's just that's really what got me. And a lot of the detractors to that evidence right there is they'll say something like, well, Kennedy told the Secret Service that he wasn't going to have those Yale boys or Harvard boys, whatever it was, protecting his detail. And that's a load of bunk. Secret Service details are supposed to, from their job description, protect the president at all costs. And they didn't drop the ball that day. They threw the ball out of their hands and let it bounce away.
Well, you know, I was in Colombia. That's where I was living during the episode in 2012. I was there in Cartagena.
Oh, yeah.
And I could say that it wasn't dropping the ball. They
no.
just
the strippers.
The messages have been sent for a while.
Yeah, the strippers. Yeah, I thought that was a message myself too. Yeah, you see what we can get to. We can get strippers and coke dealers or whoever we want to. Get right next to you if we want to. Mm-hmm. And we've got these patsies lined up. We've had them lined up for years and years and years, and they'll stick a knife in your chest at our will, you know, or whatever the case happens to be. A gun,
fire a 22, do whatever. Yeah.
It's just amazing what people will do for money or for prestige or fame or whatever. But I don't know. You think he's been in the last two or three years. They've started and created all those skirmishes over there. They're trying to get Assad out of office. They took Gaddafi off. They took out Mubarak, and they've taken out the Crimean government. Yeah, I mean, one would look on paper and see he's got a D for a Democrat behind his name, but they could also look at his record and say, geez, you know, he's just about like a Bush. He's just about like a warmongering Bush.
You know, our presidents had been neutralized, each one of them, and I'm aware of the neutralization against Reagan and Bush. I'm aware of what was done with them so that they would acquiesce to whatever duties need be. Clinton was pretty easy to take care of. So, you know, they have always had to toe the line with their benefactors, and they always will. You know, once you get to the powerful and once you get the funds in place and the money's in place to become an elected official at that level, you've already been compromised, and they pretty well are all compromised and have to dance to the dance or face the music. And, you know, a politician to begin with, by virtue of them being a politician, they don't have many nuts anyhow.
Yeah.
So they acquiesce to whatever.
Yeah.
And say, oh, well, I'll be out of here in another few years and things will be better. And I'm fit, set for life. So.
Yeah. Beyond the easiest treat.
There are very few that would say, American public, I'll take a bullet for you.
Right. I've actually got
a question. They want the American public to go to war and take a bullet for them, but I'll be damned if they want, if they would do the same for us.
Yeah, exactly. Excuse me, Chip. I got a question from the chat room. Somebody would like to know if you were involved with Operation Phoenix.
Operation Phoenix was going on at the same time, and I was involved with the man running it, Bill Colby. But the actual Phoenix program, though, in Thailand, we were more in support. I was sent to Thailand actually to support Air America in their flights, and they were based out of there. And Phoenix was out of different areas with the MACV. So no, but under the same regime, yes.
Okay. I'm not familiar with Phoenix. I was just wondering what that was myself. But you mentioned Air America. That was the operation that ran the drugs out of Southeast Asia into.
Oh, come no, on.
It wasn't?
CIA never ran drugs.
No? You mean the cocaine import agency doesn't do that kind of stuff?
You know, and the movie about Gary Webb is coming out. I think it's coming out today.
Is it?
It's a horrific story how they degraded a good journalist.
Yeah.
He had the goods. I mean, I even sent him flight plans from my flights in South America where, you know, the goods are sitting right there, and they degraded him and beat him to the point that he shot himself in the head twice. Now go figure
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah, well. Because everyone knows that if you don't succeed the first time, you have to shoot yourself twice in the head. Yeah, they call that Arkansiders, I think.
Psychotic reaction is what we call it.
Yeah, psychotic reaction. I really like the suicides, Chip, where somebody is found with their hands tied behind their backs, and they have their throat slit and they're hung. And they also are shot in the back of the head, and it's called a suicide. Yeah. Those are the really fun ones.
Or the Rothschild that's found in a hanging himself from a towel rack in a hotel, and then you touch the towel rack and it falls out of the wall.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
that kind of thing. No, people just a lot of people, especially here in America. What do you think the problem with a lot of Americans is? Do you think it's not
They're complacent.
Just,
They're complacent. If it isn't a direct attack against them, they don't want to get involved.
Yeah.
And, you know, our meetings in Jupiter Island with our leaders, including President Bush, you know, they told us that the American people are complacent. We had concerns about doing certain things and kept it catching up to us. And they said, the American people are complacent. We'll control things here. You guys go take care of business. We've got your back.
Yeah,
yes, we did, and we took care of business well. While the eyes of the world were on a little episode in Kuwait, we were in other countries reaping havoc as special ops, taking down other leaders and ruining those countries, and we did well.
Yeah, you said 92. You finally retired from the Army.
Well, 1992 is
the Air Force
when I walked away, and then 94 is when I was charged with treason.
Ah, that's right. Yeah, you. Explain a little bit about your treason charges and your imprisonment.
Well, in 71, when I was released, when I was freed from in captivity in Cambodia, I was debriefed by the man who ran the mission, William Colby. He wasn't the director of intelligence yet, but the following year he became director of intelligence. And he became a friend, and he, you know, as a young kid, young military guy, I guess he felt sorry for me getting thrown into that stuff. And he he kept me close. He kept me working through my military career as an asset for the Defense Intelligence Agency. So I would monthly report into the DIA what I'm doing, what I'm finding, and all of my assignments were pretty well controlled by the DIA and the CIA in conjunction. And we worked throughout the years in those in special missions, special operations, different teams that I worked with. And Bill Colby told me, Chip, because of this thing, your initial run here, you're going to have to keep what we call an insurance policy. And so he showed me how to keep documents, how to save documents, how to keep them in safe places, and gave me technology that we had at the time. At the time, the technology was really cool, the best in the world, cameras that take micro photos of documents and things like that.
Yep.
That today, is just an antique. But, back then it was the best of the best. And so I had access to that. We had access to microphones and all kinds of equipment. And I would record and both video, once video recordings were viable entity, take video recordings and take recordings of different mission briefs I was on, so that I was protected. I actually required the president to sign orders, executive orders, allowing us to do certain missions and keeping us protected from prosecution, especially if we were going offshore into a third world country. We wanted to make sure that we weren't dead men walking over there again, as I was the first time. And on 17 separate missions, those were provided. So I kept insurance. And when we were told that, historically speaking, Bush and there was a guy named Ross Perot were enemies. They hated each other.
Yeah.
Both Texas boys. And Perot couldn't stand Bush. Bush couldn't stand Perot. But it goes back for a reason, too. Remember that 1978 debacle in the desert I talked about, 79 in that time zone. The hostages that we were trying to rescue were Perot's employees.
They were?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow. And, all 400 plus of them?
You'll recall the story about October Surprise is the Republican National Convention, or the boys from the Republican Party, or the people helping run the election for Reagan, got together and tried to arrange the release of all these prisoners later down the road, so that it would appear that Carter couldn't get this, and that promises by another candidate to get them out would fare well and gain votes, and it did. And it's historical, and Perot always blamed Bush for that. And he swore that he'd do anything and everything and spend his fortune trying to keep him out of the White House. And he tried. And in that last run,
in 92,
Bush, was so frustrated because Perot was really coming up in the polls.
He was
moving up through.
He was.
He had a good foothold. He probably wasn't going to win, but he was definitely going to split the vote.
He was going to take a lot of Republican votes away from Bush.
Yeah, exactly. So what they wanted is they wanted him out of the race. They in our meeting in Jupiter Island, they said, "Put Tatum." I said, "Yes, sir." He said, "Perot." I said, "Yes, sir." He said, "Get him out of the race."
Yeah.
So that was the neutralization order. I said, "Sir, I'm not going to get involved in that. That's a pissing thing between you and him." And he said, "I told you to get him out of the race. I expect it to be done." I said, "Look, you've told us, we told you several times, we're not going to work on American soil, and we're not going to work on American soil. So you just need to get a grip." And he said, "I'll have your ass if you don't do it, Tatum." I said, "You don't have to have my ass." I got my videotape out. I handed it to the security officer in the meeting, and I said, "I resigned," and I walked out. And, Colby called me, all the guys called me and said, "Tatum, I can't believe you did that. You really pissed the wrong guy off." I said, "Well, I'm just tired of it. I just want out. I want gone." He said, "Well, you don't really just leave." I said, "What are you going to do?" He said, "Well, I'll tell you what's going to happen." And they said, "They're coming after you, Tatum. They're coming after you, and they're going to charge you with treason." I said, "How can they charge me with treason?" I said, "I didn't do anything wrong." He said, "You forget. You don't have to do anything
You don't have
wrong.
To do anything Still, wrong. That's right.
And so that, I'll be damned if they didn't."
That's right.
And it took an appeals court to get them off my ass, but they did it. So.
Yeah. It's not what you can prove in a court of law. It's what they can insinuate to a judge or a jury, which you allegedly did.
And the attorney general at the time said, "I can indict a ham sandwich."
Ham sandwich, yeah. That's probably where that term came from, what I heard. Well, I'm going to let you go here, Chip. You got another interview here in just a few minutes, so I'll let you go a few minutes early.
I do, Stephen. Thank you for having me on, folks. Hello. Good to meet y'all, wherever you are in the world.
We are everywhere in the world, so yes.
And I'd like to make a plug for my website.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I have the Tatum Chronicles and Operation Red Rock. Both are available online at my website and also on Amazon.
Okay.
I encourage you, all you voting people who are thinking about voting for a Bush, read the Tatum Chronicles first.
Yeah.
That's some of those. That's some of the insurance I talked about that I released.
Yeah, there is going to be a younger Bush that has been talked about being as a viable candidate.
And they, can't believe it.
Yeah. They're talking about Hillary Clinton and Neil Bush. And, I just can't believe that they would even do something like that. But
Hillary and Jeb, I think.
Jeb, is that who it
Neil
was?
Neil has a little too much dirt. Too many skeletons with Silverado.
Too much dirt on him? Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'll let you go here. So thanks for coming out again, Chip Tatum.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Have a good night. All right, everyone. I'm going to end that a few minutes early on that note. Chip's got another interview in about 5 minutes, so I had to let him go to get to his next show. So, everyone, this is Friday evening. I'll see everyone next Wednesday. I'm Stephen Roberts, and this has been Cancel the Cabal. Good night, everyone.